Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Global Health Limited Medanta Q3 FY23 earnings conference call hosted by JM Financial. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. Some of the statements made in today's call will be forward-looking in nature and may involve risk and uncertainties. Please refer page number 2 of the investor presentation for full disclaimer. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Cyndrella Carvalho from JM Financial. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thanks, Faizan. Good evening, everyone. I welcome you all today on behalf of JM Financial. I, Cyndrella Carvalho. We are hosting the first call of Global Health Limited, Medanta. We will be discussing quarter 3 for FY23 earnings insight with the management today. At the outset, I thank the management of Global Health for giving us this opportunity to host this call. From the management team today, we have with us Dr. Naresh Trehan, Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Pankaj Sahni, Group CEO and Director, Mr. Sanjiv Kumar, Group CFO, Mr. Ravi Gothwal, Head Investor Relations. I will now hand over the call to Dr. Trehan for his opening remark. Thank you, and over to you, doctor.
Thank you, Cyndrella, and good evening to all of you, and welcome to Medanta's first ever earnings call as a public listed entity. As you all know, the company got listed on 16th of November 2022, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all our patients, our doctors, our employees, our partners, and now our shareholders who have joined us in this journey. For the benefit of all participants, I would like to quickly share the reasons for creating Medanta, with the frequently asked question being, why Medanta? If you step back in history, I graduated from King George's Medical College, Lucknow, and on completion of my internship, I left for the United States. I joined New York University in New York City, where Dr. Frank Spencer, who was considered the greatest teacher of heart surgery, was heading the whole program, and I was lucky enough to get the job, which I interviewed for, and I got selected. After finishing my training at NYU, first in general surgery and then cardiac surgery, the university asked me to stay on the faculty. I joined the faculty of NYU and was teaching and practicing cardiac surgery and doing like daily sort of development in the research labs also for cardiac surgery. Soon after I went into practice, large number of Indian patients would come to New York for me to do their coronary bypass surgery because we were the first generation of coronary bypass surgeons. It was quite clear to me that for everyone who could come to the U.S. for their surgery, there were hundreds or even thousands who were in India who needed bypass surgery but could not afford to come to the United States. That's how the journey home started. The first establishment was Escorts Heart Institute, which was a collaboration between Mr. H.P. Nanda, chairman of Escorts, the tractor company at that time, and myself. We, on completion of the Escorts Heart Institute, I returned, and I ran it for the next 20 years. While I was at Escorts Heart Institute, it was very clear that although we had made it into the largest heart institute in the world, that there were still big deficiencies in other specialties when a patient needed, say, neurosurgery or gastroenterology or urology. The standard of medicine at the heart level, where we were at Escorts Heart Institute, and the rest of the specialties was quite stark, So the patients were not getting the best of treatments across all specialties. So hence the thought came to me that we needed to build an institution which would be like the Mayo Clinics and the Cleveland Clinics of the East, where all super specialists of world class could practice on the same platform and be able to give the patients the finest medicine that was available anywhere in the world at a fraction of the cost. So hence the planning and execution of Medanta the Medicity started, which is a 43-acre plot or campus in Gurgaon. And we built the hospital, which is 1,400 beds, with all super specialties. We opened at the end of 2009, actually to early 2010. And since then, the journey has been quite exciting, quite fulfilling, and quite successful. The whole idea being that we were able to execute the best of treatment for any patients that came to us in the most difficult of circumstances, our outcomes would be that of anybody in the world or better. So having done that, and in the first, we rapidly sort of achieved success. In the first 15 months, we broke even. And then the patients and the families embraced the idea of Medanta. Like I said, it was by nature the Cleveland Clinic or Mayo Clinic of the East. So then what happened, we felt that since this standard and the acceptance was so huge, that other people also needed it in different spots. So let's take this standard. After we knew that we had robust protocols and that we had systems which were strongly rooted by them, that we did our first greenfield facility in Lucknow, which is 1,000 beds. And became operational a little over 2 years ago. Then we have, and that has become very successful. So the idea of transporting this standard to other places also became quite clear to us that it was done, it could be done, as we wanted to maintain the same standard that we have in Gurgaon, in Lucknow, and then now in Patna. And on the side, we had picked up Ranchi and Indore as smaller facilities. So now the sixth facility, that is Noida, is coming out of the ground. And we are carrying on the same ethics, the same philosophy, the same quality of care that we had established in Gurgaon to all other patients, who, whether they may be in Lucknow, Patna, or Ranchi, or Indore. So the movement has been very, very satisfying and successful. And they're both, all the facilities are doing well. But the essential part of it is that we believe that if you deliver the best quality of care, highest quality of care, with compassion and with affordable costs for the people, so that more and more people can take benefit of this kind of system, then you will always have success, because good medicine, as I say, will make good business, but does not happen in the reverse. Good business does not make good medicine. So with this focus, we have traveled to other parts of the country. Now we serve over 400 million Indians in the heartland of India. And the story will go on and on, as it will be told by our CEO, Group CEO, Mr. Pankaj Sahni. So I will now hand it over to him to walk you through the different numbers and results and the future plans that we may be able to share with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Ten. I'll share with you some of the highlights, as Dr. Ten had mentioned, that have got us till today. So as Dr. Ten mentioned, we started our hospital in 2009, end of 2009 in Gurgaon. That was a 43-acre hospital. And from there, over the course of the last 10-12 years, we have now grown to 5 operating hospitals. That is, we have hospitals in Lucknow, Patna, Indore, and Ranchi, in addition to Gurgaon. And we are building our 6th hospital in Noida. So our Lucknow hospital, that started in 2019, that is currently at about 475 beds with a capacity to scale up to 950 beds. We are already adding beds in those that facility as we speak. Our Patna hospital, which started in January 2022, is got a capacity of 650 beds. That is currently operating at 330 beds. And there as well, we are adding capacity and adding operating rooms actually in both Lucknow as well as in Patna. The two smaller facilities are in Indore and Ranchi. Indore is at 175 beds and Ranchi at 200 beds. And those hospitals were launched in 2014 and 15. And our latest hospital, which is our Noida hospital, that hospital will be 550 beds. And that is expected to come on board in financial year 25. So as you can see, as Dr. Jain mentioned as well, we currently have about 400 million people living in the states where Medanta hospitals are present. And we really cover a large part of the population heartland of the country. In addition to this, if you look at our presence, we have diversified out of Medanta Gurgaon across almost five or six different cities, thereby ensuring that we have a good diverse mix of hospitals across these various areas. And the most important thing, as Dr. Chen mentioned, is the way in which Medanta delivers its healthcare. And for this, we have a unique model of delivery, which is focused really on ensuring that we really operate at the highest end of care. We have been rewarded for delivering exceptional clinical talent, and that comes exceptional clinical care, and that comes with having exceptional clinical talent, really some of the cutting edge infrastructure and technology, in fact, infrastructure that is comparable to some of the leading institutions in the world, and built around a very strong value system around delivering high end and high integrity care, and also having very robust processes. So if you look at the way in which we deliver care, we really operate at a very complex level. Our facilities across the 2,700 beds that are currently operational have almost 70 operating rooms. About 30% of our bed capacity is critical care, ICU beds. So we are really focused in on doing care at a very high-end, very complex nature. And we employ doctors full-time. We have over 1,400 doctors. We've been fortunate to get some of the best talent in the country to work for us across our units. And that is why a lot of the care we deliver is really destination care. So our patients don't only come to us from the community or the neighborhood where our hospitals are located, but they come to us from around the country and indeed around the world. And that is why we really have come to be known as the last stop in Indian healthcare, so to speak. So if you look at the way in which we've been fortunate to get set up, this is how we are really thinking about the delivery of care with complex work, delivering work at the highest end. Now, I'll share with you some of the performance parameters over the course of the last 9 months, that is the 9 month ending 31st December 2022. And if you look at our performance, we've really been able to deliver robust performance across almost all of the clinical indicators or performance indicators. So our consolidated total income was about 20,273 million, and that grew by 21% year on year. This growth has been driven by a variety of factors, including growth in patient volumes, growth in our bed occupied days, as well as changes in specialty and payer mix. Our EBITDA was 4,856 million, and that's a growth of 22%, with very strong margins at 24% EBITDA margins. Our profit after tax showing even greater growth at 26% growth, and that has come in at 2,250 million. And our PAT margins as well have improved now to about 11.1%. So during this period, we've been able to add about 167 new beds. This includes 65 beds in Lucknow and 102 beds in our Patna hospital. And as I mentioned earlier, this bed addition continues as we speak. We continue to add this capacity not only in our existing hospitals, but we also will be adding this capacity in our upcoming hospitals. And we'll talk a little bit more about that just shortly. So one important point to mention is that as we continue to add our bed capacity, the appropriate metric to look at is bed occupied days, which have actually increased year on year in the 9 month period by about 11%. Also, healthy growth in our ARPOB, that's grown by 8.5% to 58,494 in the nine-month period. And this is driven by increased contribution from higher complex specialties, as well as a lowering of the contribution from internal medicine. As COVID recedes, we see the internal medicine as a contribution, as a percentage of the total revenue reducing, and that going more towards the complex specialties that we're known for. When I look at our inpatient count, it increased by 32%. Our outpatient count has increased by 12% during this period. International revenue also sees an increase, 83% growth in international revenue to 1,197 million. And that is driven by increased volume in international patient admissions. You would be aware that there was a dip in international admissions because of the COVID pandemic. That seems to be coming back as we speak. Quarter on quarter, we see improvements in the international volumes. And lastly, our in-house pharmacy business has also been doing very well. That continues to register strong growth. This is our outpatient pharmacy revenue increasing by 58% from 396 million in the nine-month period ended December 2001 to 625 million in the nine-month period ended December 31st, 2022. So these are the high-level financial metrics for the nine-month period. Important to point out that we continue to strengthen our core business, continue to build out a sustainable business model. A few important facts for you to be aware of. During the 9 months, we've added over 130 super specialist doctors across the various units. We continue to maintain ourselves as one of the most preferred destinations for senior doctors. We added some exceptional clinical talent across the units. Some of the recent senior doctors include Dr. Randeep Guleria, who joins us in our internal medicine and respiratory department, the former director of AIIMS Delhi. Dr. Praveen Khilnani, who's joined us as our chairman of pediatrics in our Gurgaon facility. Dr. Gargan Gautam, who's joined us as our vice chairman in uro-oncology and robotic surgery. Dr. Preeti Rastogi joined us as our head of obstetrics in Gurgaon. And Dr. Neelam Vinay has joined us as our director of obstetrics and gynecology in our Lucknow facility. So these are just a few of the illustrious faculty that we have across the system. And when you look at the new specialties that we've added, in Gurgaon, we started our lung transplant program. We've started our mother and child in both Lucknow as well as in Gurgaon. And in Patna, we've also started gastroenterology, surgical oncology services, and also we'll be building out our radiation oncology services in both Lucknow as well as in Patna. So in line with our plans to deliver the Medanta model of care, we continue to focus in on the core focus of being able to deliver the highest end of care with the highest clinical specialties and the highest clinicians. We also look at delivering care across the continuum and extending this care outside the hospital. We launched our Medanta Labs business in January of this year, and we've already started out home care services and our outpatient pharmacy, as I mentioned earlier. So when I look at all of the services that we have, really being able to deliver care closer to the patient's home, deliver care at the high end, and ensure that we are always focused on making sure we deliver the highest standard to our patients. Looking forward, we are confident of maintaining our growth trajectory. We believe some key levers for this growth will be, of course, first our ramp up of the developing hospitals in Lucknow and Patna. The second will be our strengthening of the core by adding new specialties, new doctors. And we also have new hospitals coming on board. So the first of those is the addition of our Noida facility, which will be about 550 beds by FY25. That should come on board. We add a new hospital in our ecosystem, which we announced yesterday. That is a new asset-light O&M partnership model for a 300-plus-bed hospital in Indore that will have about 100 critical care beds, over 15 operating theaters. And this will help us to fortify our presence in central India. Finally, we will be adding about 700 beds at the existing facilities, and that will allow us to deliver the care at deliver the beds at a slightly lower capex per bed, because a lot of the primary capex by putting up the building and putting up the facility has actually already happened, and we already have these hospitals operating. So that is our story over the course of the 9 months and the future plans. I will hand over now to our CFO, Sanjeev Kumar Saxena, to walk us through some of the quarterly performance numbers. Sanjeev?
Yeah, thank you, Pankaj. I will now share the highlights of quarter three FY23, the result that we have declared yesterday. We have delivered highest ever quarterly total income of rupees 7,062 million, registering a growth of 19%. In terms of EBITDA, it was 1,719 million, a growth of 17.9% with healthy EBITDA margin of 24.3%. Our profit after tax was also INR 806 million, that's a growth of 15.3%. In terms of some of the operational parameters that you look at, our occupied beds during this quarter increased by 13.5%, and our inpatient volumes grew by 23.1% to 35,000 plus, coupled with outpatient volume growth of 16% to 5.5 lakh plus. In terms of ARPOB, it also grew 4.3% year on year, and this is about our quarter three. Now, we are happy to take questions from the participants to really discuss, to really take it forward.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from the line of Amit Kadam from Canara Robeco Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sir. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I have two questions. The first question is from...
Sorry to interrupt you. The audio is unclear from your line. Please use the handset mode.
I'm on handset mode. I'll try again. Okay. Is this better?
Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, hard to hear you, but please go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So, my first question is regarding to slide number 31, where you have put details on the mature hospital and the developing hospital. In that, most of the mature hospital, if I just see, our growth for the 9 months in terms of EBITDA has been quite flat, and then occupied beds were also like a 4% decline. Is it because we have some omicron on base sitting in the base? That's what it explains the beta and occupied by. That was my question number one. And question number two.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, could you repeat that question?
So question number is that natural hospital growth was flat for the 9 months in terms of EBITDA, and there was actually a decline in occupied beds. Can you just throw some light on it?
Sure. You want us to address that, or you want us to take both the questions together?
So, second question is on other expenses. So, other expenses in this quarter has gone up by 38%. How do we look at this particular line item going forward?
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. So let me take the first question, and Sanjeev will walk us through the question on the other expenses.
Mr. Kadam, please mute your self-mute your line.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah, can I go ahead?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So when you look at the performance in the mature hospitals, keep in mind that this is our Gurgaon, Indore, as well as our Ranchi facility. All the three are grouped together in our mature hospitals. And if you look at our occupied bed days in the 9 month period of December 21 versus the 9 month period December 22, important to take you back to what was happening last year. Typically, as you would be aware, The quarter three is a slightly lower quarter in terms of the volumes because of the festival season that happens around Diwali, Dussehra, etc. And however, last year, because of the COVID impact in the first quarter of the year, we did see a very strong bounce back in some of the numbers. So you saw exceptionally high numbers in the nine-month period ending December 21 versus the nine-month period ending December 22. So when you look at the occupied bed days in the mature facilities, the sum of the dip is really relevant to the fact that last year was an exceptionally high volume growth because there was a lot of pent-up demand which was there during the Delta wave, which got addressed as we moved forward into the subsequent quarters. When you look at our EBITDA performance over the group over the period, that period, we continue to see very strong EBITDA margins across the group. You see that we are already delivering about 24% EBITDA margins. Some amount of growth in other expenses, which Sanjeev will walk us through, some of that linked to our repairs and maintenance costs or some of our facilitation charges, etc. So Sanjeev, over to you to just walk us through some of the other costs.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. When we look at the other expenses, you're right that that in this quarter, I mean, in this 9 months, it has really gone up. So some of the expenses which have really gone up are some of the one-off expenses, like in case of repair and maintenance, this has actually gone up, and specifically some of the assets had undertaken some kind of a repair and maintenance activity. That was one. The second one is some of the facilitation charges increased, largely because of the increase in the international business we really incurred. So that was the second reason. The third one is that some of the professional charges increased because of an assignment that actually we had undertaken for optimization of our material costs. And as you see that the impact of that has been that that material costs have really come down as well. So I think that was the third reason. And the fourth another reason was the increase in sales and marketing costs, which if you actually recall that since the last two and a half years, during the COVID as well as the very next year after the COVID, we were very limited in terms of our sales and marketing. We had restricted that, and this year now again, we have started undertaking sales and marketing costs. So that's the actual third one, rather the actual fourth one, and the other expenses were in some of the conference expenses, which actually increased because of the activity of conferences that actually we started in this 9 months once the normal activity has started. So these are some of the reasons why our expenses really went down. Hello?
Next question, please.
Hello? Hello?
Please go ahead, Mr. Kalka.
So because we don't have the quarterly data for the historical, we don't know how that things would have in the past.
Sir, we are getting disturbance from your line.
Sorry, there's too much background noise. We can't really hear you. Hello?
Okay, I'll try later. I'll join back with you.
Thank you. Participants, to ask a question, you may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Dheeresh Pathak from White Oak Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity and congratulations, Dr. Trehan and team, for the successful listing. Just continuing with the same question on slide 31. So, as I understand, that revenue for the mature hospitals, the revenue is increased by 8%, but EBITDA is flat because of higher sales and marketing and higher facilitation fees for international patients. Is that the main reason, sir?
Yeah, so I think that's one of the main reasons. But certainly, I also mentioned very clearly that there were some other expenses as well, like actually repair and maintenance, as well as the conference expenses, etc. But yes, you are right that those have been.
So the margin that you're seeing for 9 months in FY 23, 22.3%, is this understated or do you think this is more of a normalized margin is FY23 9 months more reflective of a normalized period, or there is scope to improve the margin here?
So let me answer that question in two parts. First, let me answer the question on, you know, what are the scopes for improving efficiency. So one is, as you may be aware, in one of the presentations you would have seen, that we undertook our JCI audit in our Gurgaon facility this year. Typically, as that comes on board, every 2-3 years, you do have some amount of repairs and maintenance costs that happens over the period. So that may not happen every single year, but it happens maybe every 2-3 years. So I wouldn't say it's a one-off cost, but at the same time, it may or may not come in at every single year. That's one aspect. The second aspect, as Sanjeev had alluded to, is that we have already taken some kinds of activities towards trying to bring greater efficiencies into the cost structure. Specifically with material costs, you can see some of the improvements playing out actually in terms of the overall numbers. And we continue to look at opportunities to add in efficiencies in material costs, in manpower costs, as well as across all the line items of other expenses. So to answer your question, are there opportunities for efficiencies? Absolutely, there are opportunities. The other thing that you will see is that over the course of the last couple of years, we haven't really taken any tariff increases, partially because of the COVID impact. That activity has started now, step by step. So you may see some amount of tariff increases, and that may also add to potential margin uplifts as we move forward. And the third aspect, of course, is that, you know, we have new clinicians coming on board. We have some new services that I mentioned earlier getting added in, including complex work. So as you look at the sales mix improving towards more complex work, you do expect to see an ARPOB growth and a corresponding revenue growth as you move forward. So these are the opportunities for improvement, if I may. And we do feel that there are opportunities to be captured. When you look at, you know, what is more reflective of a safe, stable state, so we don't really give any kind of, guidance as such. And also our industry and our business and our belief in the way in which healthcare is supposed to be delivered is not really quarter to quarter, but actually focused in on slightly more longer term, looking into the right aspects of delivery of care. So as you think about how margins will stabilize over this period, we've always maintained that any performance which is anywhere in the range of 20 to 25% EBITDA margins is really very good performance. And we don't see no reason why Medanta would not be able to deliver that kind of strong performance as we have in the past.
Certainly. So this slide is very interesting because your developing hospitals are showing KPIs, margins and occupancy which are similar to the mature hospital, in fact better. So on the developing hospital side, I'm assuming because in the one of the later slides you mentioned that Patna turned EBITDA positive in the last quarter itself. So a lot of the EBITDA here on this slide, 153 crores for 9 months, is attributed, I would assume, to Lucknow asset, right?
Yes. So just to give you the very quick history, our Lucknow hospital, which we started towards the end of 2019, really January 2020, that was able to deliver EBITDA breakeven in its first full year of operations itself. In fact, it delivered about a 15% EBITDA margin in that year, if I recall correctly, which was disclosed in some of our RHP and some of our IPO documents. As we look at that margin has continued to stay strong, in fact, continued to grow, not only in percentage terms, but also in absolute amounts. And a large part of the margin that you are describing here does definitely come from our Lucknow facility, which is now about 500 beds. So while we still consider it as developing, important to keep in mind that the 500-bed facility is, you know, one of the larger facilities in Indian healthcare. So we continue to see growth coming out of Lucknow. Our Patna facility, although it is very new, only started in January of this year, has also done exceptionally well in a very short period of time. We continue to add beds. We continue to add doctors and clinical teams there. We are building 10 more operating rooms. So we don't yet say that has kind of reached a stable state. However, we did deliver a positive EBITDA both in quarter two and quarter three. And we believe that Patna also is on its way to a strong performance. One word of, you know, I guess, caution or also just clarification is that today our Lucknow facility is 100% cash plus PPA. We have zero schemes there. We don't have much corporate or PSU-type business either. So a lot of the realizations and the ARPOBs, which you're seeing, as you say, comparable to some of the mature facilities, are driven by a very, very high percentage of cash business. So that is, I think, a little bit different from what you may be familiar to seeing in the industry in general.
So as the newer beds at capacity gets added, it will be fair to say that you might take some scheme patients. So the maybe the absolute amount will increase, but the EBITDA margin and ARPOB might go lower than what we are currently seeing, right?
So, when you look at the bed growth, right, just to give you, I think we're about 470 beds, so you can say about 500 beds right now. If you look at our last quarter occupancies and availability of beds in Lucknow, it's actually been fairly tight, which is why we have been trying to add beds. So at present, we haven't really taken on, signed on, or any schemes, as of now in our Lucknow facility. But definitely, as we move towards 1,000 beds, there is a possibility that we may look at augmenting the patient mix, not only in terms of schemes, but there are also corporates, there are also public sector undertakings, etc., to be able to service those profile of patients as well. So yes, you may see that there may be some change in the payer mix. But just to, you know, reflect on our overall payer mix across the group, including all the mature hospitals, if you look at our payer mix, and it's been consistent year on year for the last several years, upwards of 80% of our payer mix is cash plus insurance across the group. So while we may have some scheme, it would possibly be on the similar lines as what you're seeing across the group. Absolute margins will increase, depending on how the cost to serve the incremental patients are there. Even your margin percentages may or may not change. It really depends on how you think about it. And another important point, which I did mention in the opening, you know, section, was that our doctors are all full-timers. So unlike.
The person.
Hello? Are you able to hear me?
Sir, please go ahead.
Yeah. Unlike many of the other hospitals where, you know, the doctors are more on a visiting or a fee-for-service kind of model, our doctors are all full-timers. And so, you know, we benefit, therefore, from a lower marginal cost for every incremental patient.
Thank you. Mr. Pathak, may we request that you return to the question queue for follow-up questions? The next question is from the line of Nikhil Mathur from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening. Sorry, I'll hopping on the same slide number 31. If I look at the EBITDA in 9 months FY 2023, I mean, it's flattish. This includes Gurgaon, right? So, and I also remember that most of the overheads, even for the new facilities, sit in the Gurgaon facility. Is that right understanding that you are showing here some of the overhead associated with your newer facilities as well?
That's absolutely right, Nikhil. So, as you may recall, and as I think we may have also mentioned when in our prospectus, so all our group costs, including the costs which are there for some of the newer business units, they are all currently part of the mature hospital costs. So, all of that cost, including the corporate overheads, you know, the shared services in terms of IT costs, etc., all of these costs sit in the mature facilities and are actually recorded as part of our Gurgaon costs. So we don't actually split out the corporate overheads in addition from the Gurgaon unit. Of course, if we did that, you would see a slightly different kind of a margin profile.
So, if I strip out the overhead associated with other facilities, would the base Gurgaon, Indore, Ranchi combined would have grown EBITDA on a YoY basis?
So, you know, like I said, we haven't, we haven't split out the costs specifically on each of those aspects. I can, however, tell you that those costs have increased over the nine-month period with additions of a variety of manpower, including some of the newer services, etc., whether it's pharmacy, labs, etc. So my assumption would be definitely, yes, there would be margin growth, which would be better than what you're seeing today if you did split out those costs. So that is definitely something that you would see. But we haven't reported that, so I can't give you a definitive number.
Okay, sure. No worries. My second question is on, if I understand correctly, also your Gurgaon facilities caters a lot of upcountry footfalls from Eastern UP and the Bihar region and all. Now that you have a full-fledged facility in Lucknow, now in Patna, wouldn't that kind of lead to some bit of cannibalization in your Gurgaon unit? And why I also ask this question is because in the vicinity you have many upcoming bed additions from your competitors. So just trying to understand if there's going to be any cannibalization, any competitive pressures in your Gurgaon unit because of all this.
So let me address that in two parts. The first part around our patient mix in our Gurgaon facility over the years. You're right. Upwards of 50% of our patients in our Gurgaon facility over the years have come from outside of Gurgaon. That includes Haryana, UP, Bihar, Rajasthan, Punjab, as well as, of course, the international business. Interestingly, as we have opened our Lucknow facility, and this is now maybe a couple of years older, we did actually see that with the awareness of our brand in UP, we did actually see that in the first year of opening itself, some of our patients in Lucknow, from Lucknow, actually increased in our Gurgaon facility. So we didn't really see too much cannibalization because of that. At least that was our initial hypothesis. We did see that increase in that particular period. So our thought is that for every patient that travels all the way from upcountry to Gurgaon or from UP or Bihar to Gurgaon, there is thousands of other patients that are already in UP and Bihar who are unable to make the trip. And, you know, we believe that with increasing presence in these territories, you also have increasing brand awareness for Medanta as a whole. So we do see that we are not overly concerned with the cannibalization. That being said, we did experience during the COVID pandemic some increased demand from our local community, where we actually had people who were reaching out to us saying, please do, you know, look at serving the community closer to you as well in a greater way. And so we have actually put in efforts to expand our connect into the local Gurgaon community. We've opened about 30 plus clinics in various residential colonies. In the last 9 months, we've opened a new large facility clinic in Gurgaon in Subhash Chowk. So that now gives us two clinics running in Gurgaon itself, with a third one in South Delhi. So there is some movement to increase the servicing and the connect to the community in Gurgaon and in the NCR region as well. As far as your question around capacity, see, if you look at Delhi NCR as a whole, and that includes Noida, Delhi, Gurgaon, there's still a fair amount of demand in the city. And when you look at the absolute population as well as the population growth that is likely to come versus the beds that are available, especially the high quality beds, we don't see a huge amount of concern around too much saturation of supply, etc. So this is our belief. Also keep in mind it's somewhat easier to put up a bed. You still need a doctor to treat the patient. So that supply is not increasing just because the beds are increasing.
Got it.
Mr. Mathur, may we request that you return to the question queue for follow-up questions? Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tushar Manudhane from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Please go ahead.
thanks for the opportunity. So just on this asset-light hospital to be set up in Indore, while the partner is going to give the warm shell, so what kind of investment is going to be there from our side?
So if you look at the Indore facility, the model which is there, which is now reasonably well known in the industry, is that the real estate partner would actually own the land and would put up the complete warm shell. Our investment will be only to the extent of the medical equipment. The rest of the entire facility, equipment, investment, capex, etc., interiors will be given by the partner. And that investment will range anywhere from 130 crores to 160 crores. Over the course of the first cycle of all the equipment that we need to put in. But, you know, given our relationships with our equipment partners, which obviously we have for many years, very deep relationships with them, a lot of these are actually staggered in terms of the actual payments that are required to be made out for this equipment. So we don't see this as something where there would be a huge cash outflow in any one particular year.
Understood. And in the matured category, would current Indore hospital would be at a similar EBITDA margin as is the matured segment, or is it lower or more? If you could just explain that.
So Indore is a little bit of an interesting scenario. I think Sanjeev mentioned we don't report out Indore separately. But our current facility is significantly smaller than some of the larger established facilities. It's only about 170 beds. And in fact, we've really got the majority of the work in Indore coming in from just maybe two or three specialties. So we have cardiac and neuro, which are the lead specialties in that unit. We do also have gastroenterology, digestive services, as well as a kidney and urology institute. We do kidney transplants there as well. But when you look at the entire range of oncology services, these services are not available there, essentially because we don't have the space to be able to deliver these. And we also don't have the space to be able to put the kind of critical care capacity that is demanded of us and that we're well known for in our various other units. So definitely the EBITDA margins in Indore are lower than the ones which you see across the mature groups. It's also significantly smaller in terms of absolute contribution, both on the top line and the bottom line. But it's not really fully equipped to deliver the comprehensive range of clinical specialties that we can offer and that there is a demand for.
Understood, sir. And secondly, on this labs as a business, so while we've seen over last 12 to 15 months, there has been significant amount of competition entering, may it be online or may it be the other corporates. And given that the existing guys are sort of facing challenges in terms of volume growth, in which case pricing power was not there per se. So what, you know, from a capital allocation and from a effort allocation for this part of the business over maybe like next 3 to 5 years, what's your thought process to get into this business, and what kind of return ratios do you expect from this business?
So let me take the three different aspects. First of all, in terms of the capital allocation, you would be aware that the lab business has really very limited capital requirements, because the model for most of the equipment is on what they call a reagent rental basis. So it's basically a pay-per-use or a pay-as-you-go type of model. So you don't actually spend a huge amount of money in the capex for the lab. Also, we already have existing capacity in our hospital labs. So when you look at the cities where we started out, it's really the cities where we already have hospital services. We have large laboratory services in each of those hospitals. And so the incremental sample load that comes in can actually be well serviced by the labs that we have right now. We may do some selective lab additions, but that's really more to manage the logistics than to manage any kind of capacity constraints that we have in our existing labs. So that's one point, not a huge amount of capex we see coming into those businesses. The second important point is that while you are right, there has been, I would say, a COVID-induced enthusiasm for some of these services, whether it's labs or some of the other services that people see. Our approach is very different. One, unlike some of the standalone labs, we don't really have the same kind of customer acquisition costs that would be there in newer age standalone lab businesses, because we already have the patient population from our hospitals. And most importantly, what we found is that a lot of our patients are actually demanding of us the ability to help service them a little bit closer to home. So our thought is that this allows us to service the patients across the life cycle. It allows us to deliver care to the patient closer to home, and is really something that COVID showed us is something that our patients are demanding. And we look at it as a comprehensive continuity of care model rather than a kind of standalone, you know, separate business. And so therefore, our moves into this segment, whether it is outpatient pharmacy, whether it is labs business, is actually really very deliberate and is linked up to the communities which we already serve and the extended communities which are our patients, which are demanding the service of us.
Sure, sir. That's it from me. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Cinderella Carvalho from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. I just wanted to understand, we were contemplating some price increases. Have we taken those, or we are still thinking about it? And if we have we taken it across the facilities? Any thoughts will be helpful.
Sure. So Cinderella, our price increases, as I may have mentioned also in the opening section, is really oriented towards making sure that we remain as affordable as possible for the communities where we serve. So we actively try not to be the most expensive in the city where we operate, but try to be a little bit more reasonable, maybe benchmarked as, you know, the third or fourth most expensive in that particular city or community. So that has been the broad philosophy which we started with, and the philosophy that we at least currently maintain. So our tariff increases are all done in line with our clinical leadership. Each department actually decides what is the appropriate tariff for the kind of complexity of work which they are doing, as well as, of course, the nature of the costs associated with servicing that kind of complex work. So that's been our approach. Because of COVID, for almost 3 years, as you mentioned rightly, we had not taken any tariff increase across the network. We have now started to take that tariff increase. We take it you know, systematically over the course of the various specialties. I would say the majority of that tariff increase would be in Gurgaon, because Lucknow and Patna are still new, although we are seeing some selective tariff increases in Lucknow as well. That process is underway. Some of that tariff increases has already been done. Some is currently in process, and some will be done. So we will do that over the course of the next several months. We will maintain our positioning to not be the most expensive, but we will be, as the industry tariff grows, you will also see that our tariffs will also move in line with that.
That's very helpful. I'm just going to try this. But any luck you will be able to help us with Gurgaon, Lucknow, Patna, RPOBs, ALOs, and the occupancy levels? Any color will be helpful, any of it?
Yeah, I'm sure that many people are trying to fill out their Excel models, and I do empathize. But I also must defer to, you know, the guidance that I get from our CFO and our compliance team to make sure that whatever we are disclosing out is the numbers which are, you know, appropriately audited and appropriately displayed. So the only thing that I can say is that, as you would guess, is that our mature facilities are still fairly heavily weighted towards Gurgaon. You can just get a sense that if you take the total number of beds that are there in those facilities, if I say it's probably it's about 1,500 beds would be, or 1,700 beds would be in the mature facilities, almost 1,300 of those are in Gurgaon itself. And obviously, Gurgaon would have a slightly higher tariff and ARPOB profile than Indore and Ranchi both. So that would give an indication that much of the numbers are weighted in favor of Gurgaon.
Thank you so much. I'll join back the queue.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we would request you to rejoin the question queue. The next question is from the line of Anubhav Sahu from MC Pro. Please go ahead.
Thanks for your question. I have a question to Concrete and team.
From your line. Please check.
Hello. Hello. Is it okay? Hello.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I wanted to understand more on the capacity addition. My understanding is
that the audio is still breaking from your line.
Hello. Is it okay?
Yeah. Now this is better. Thank you.
This one. Okay. So to my understanding, some of the capacity additions will happen in phases. For example, for Noida facility, though we aspire to be reaching 550 bed facility, it would 300 bed facility. And so for Patna, say around it will reach around 500 bed facility by fiscal 25. So see, take it as fiscal 25 as the timeline. Would it be fair to assume that around 1,000 beds you would be adding? And if so, what would be capex for that?
So let me just quickly touch on the bed additions and then Sanjeev can shed some light on the capex. So you're right. We add our beds in phases. Important point, as I think I mentioned earlier as well, is that although the bed additions happen in phases, the bulk of the capex, because we build the superstructure, the shell, the complete facade of our buildings in one shot. So even on day one, about 70% of the capex has already gone into the building. So the incremental beds will be at a significantly lower capex. So if you look at our Gurgaon facility, that's fairly mature. We may add some beds there. We are actually revisiting a lot of movement towards daycare. We see a lot of trends of patients shifting to daycare, and you will see that reflected in our reduction, in our significant reduction actually in our average length of stay. And we see that as a trend in healthcare that will continue. So we're adding actually some amount of capacity in our cancer services in daycare as well in our Gurgaon facility. But of course, the bulk of the bed addition will come in Lucknow, Patna and Noida. Lucknow will scale up over the course of the next couple of years from the 500 beds that it is today, probably at least scaling up another 200-300 beds depending on as the demand rolls out. Because that hospital is constructed, it's basically two towers. So one tower is now completely full. And the second tower, which can house another 300-400 beds, will be built out. And we've actually very recently, post-December, activated already some beds there in our critical care unit. So we're already added ICU beds between December and March 31. So you will see some bed additions in that period as well. Patna, like I said, is 330 beds now. Those beds will also scale up. We will probably scale from 330 first to 400 and then to 500 before we move to the 650. And Noida, while it has a capacity of 550 beds, will likely open with the bed number of 300, as you mentioned. So that will be the way in which the beds build out. Sanjeev, over to you on the catalyst.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Pankaj. And as Pankaj has just explained, that most of the beds would be actually coming in our Lucknow, Patna, and actually Noida. So I will really talk about probably almost till 25-26. And so in these three facilities, we would be adding almost 1,100 beds in case of Lucknow going from 475 at present to actually 950. In case of Patna, from almost 330 to actually 650. And in case of Noida, we will be starting with almost 300 beds, which will eventually go up to 550 beds. So we will be adding approximately 1,100 beds. And we will be having, in terms of the project cost, we will be incurring almost 1,100 crores for actually putting up these beds. But more than 60% would be towards the Noida, because that's the actual project we will be implementing the entire warm shell, etc., and the entire civil structure Our total CapEx would be approximately 100 crores, out of which more than 60% would be in case of Noida in the next three to four years in terms of specified projects.
Thank you. Mr. Sahu, may we request that you return to the question queue for follow-up questions. We'll take the next question from the line of Gagan Thareja from ASK Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening. Am I audible?
Yeah. If you can speak a little bit louder, please, Gagan.
Yeah, sure. The first question is, on in your P&L, is there any one-off expense related to the IPO in this quarter? What's the gross debt position on the balance sheet post the IPO?
Yeah. In terms of the expense, one-off expenses, there are very minor expenses of, let's say, almost 2 crores onto the field in terms of the advertisement expenses, to be precise, 1.5 crores. Certainly there would be some one-off expense in terms of the traveling, et cetera. Nothing more than that. What was your second question?
On the gross debt, on the balance sheet, what's the position?
Yeah. In terms of the gross debt, we have actually got three debts. One is the loan in case of MHPL, which is approximately 420 crores. We have got a loan in case of Patna, which is another 250 crores. We have some kind of a debt in case of GHL, which is our holding company from Asia Development Bank, which is at 66 crores. These are the three funded debts that we are having today.
Related to the CapEx, one, how will you be funding it? I mean, what would be the debt equity mix for that? Two, while you'll get efficiencies in Patna going as utilization and occupancy ramps up there, will that be offset by the new beds that come in at Lucknow and Patna and also the greenfield at Noida? I mean, if you could address these two aspects, the funding of the debt and the margin impact of new capacities.
I think let me first talk about the funding aspect. As you're aware that we've got a pretty good liquidity position in terms of our balance sheet. Certainly, the entire funding would be done out of the internal accruals as well as the debt that we have to take sometime in case of any projects, which would be there in case of Noida. At this point of time, I think it would be a mix of both. As you see that our net debt to EBITDA are at a very good position. We would be within the pretty much comfortable debt to equity of like a 2:1. That's what we expect to have for funding our future CapEx needs.
Thank you. Mr. Thareja.
Just quickly in terms of, you asked about the ramp-up as we get Noida mobilized. Definitely there are some differences in getting a new hospital up and running. If we look at our trajectory over Lucknow and Patna, we've been able to actually deliver at least positive EBITDA at a reasonably short period of time. While we don't keep that as our standard operating model, we've actually now shown that in all three of our greenfields, Gurgaon, Lucknow, as well as in Patna. The only advantage I would say in Noida versus the others is that because it's in the NCR region, we do actually already have talent across clinical and non-clinical areas in our Gurgaon facility that are actually kind of being groomed or ready to move across to our Noida facility because of the ease of being in the same city. We may have some opportunities for ensuring that we can optimize across the NCR facilities as we operationalize those facilities.
Thank you. Mr. Thareja, may we request that you return to the question queue for follow-up questions. The next question is from the line of Dhara Patwa from SMIFS Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, since you're expanding in non-metro cities, do you think attracting talent would be a challenge in those cities?
So if you look at our performance and if you look at the profile of clinical names that we've been able to attract across the cities where we operate, whether that's Lucknow, whether that's Patna, or whether that's Indore, we have not experienced this as a challenge yet. Now, obviously, we do keep in mind the availability of talent when we look at the cities where we move to. We are fortunate that the Medanta brand and our operating model, which is really clinician-friendly and doctor-led and doctor-first type of model, has created us as a kind of preferred destination for really high-quality clinical talent. We've also been fortunate that we've been able to cross-pollinate some of these units. So if you look at some of the clinical leaders in, say, our Indore facility, both the head of cardiac surgery as well as neurosurgery were doctors that were in our Gurgaon unit, and we moved them there. Our head of cardiac surgery in Patna worked here in Gurgaon with Dr. Trent. He moved there. We've had doctors move into Lucknow facility as well from here. And in fact, in Patna, we've even had clinicians come from the U.K. and move back into the facility. Now, one important point to note is that the nature of the facilities that Medanta is able to put up in these cities, frankly, has never been seen before in those areas. So, excuse me. So when you look at the kind of facility that we have in Lucknow or in Patna, there is really no facility of this caliber, either in terms of size or in terms of just the quality of infrastructure and technology in pretty much the entire state, at least not in the private space. So when we are looking at clinicians, we are able to give them a really exceptional platform for where they can practice their craft. And we are able to do things like give them, you know, huge amounts of operating rooms, additional space, really give them all the tools and technologies that allow them to deliver the highest end of medicine. And that is also one of the reasons why they feel that, you know, this is the right platform for them to come to. So we have not seen too many challenges with respect to hiring clinicians in any of these areas. We are, however, very selective, and we are very determined to maintain our full-time model. So we don't allow this kind of, you know, visiting model where a doctor would work on, you know, one day of the week in one hospital and another day of the week in another hospital. And so therefore, any restrictions on bringing in talent are really more from our side than from a supply side.
Yeah, that's helpful. That's it from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anubhav Sahu from MC Pro. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, just a follow-up question on the strategy part. I mean, since you talked about Indore, you know, when we are going to expect.
Sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Sahu. The audio is breaking from your line, sir. Please repeat your question.
Hello. Hello. Yeah, so my question is on the asset-light model, which we're trying to execute in Indore. Wanted to understand, is it a changing business model in some way, or is it a one-off thing, or is something which we may like to, you know, follow up for other cases?
So the way I would answer that is to say that, you know, neither is it a change in business model, neither is it a one-off or a first time. If you look at our facilities across the board, we have actually different types of models in each. Our Gurgaon and our Lucknow facilities, you know, we own, and Noida as well, we have owned the land and we built up those facilities. Patna is actually a PPP project with the government of Bihar, so that's a slightly different model. Our Ranchi facility is also an O&M, so there as well, we didn't invest in the infrastructure. So that's a, you know, was an existing hospital that we took over and turned around. And the Indore model will be the one where our partner will be building up the warm shell, and then we'll be putting in the medical equipment and running it. So our basic philosophy is we are open to all types of models, whether it is O&M, whether it is greenfield, whether it is brownfield, or even whether it is M&A or taking over any of these other facilities. The key aspect, though, in our model is that we must be able to ensure that this facilities that we have delivers the quality and standard of care that we have come to be known for. So what that means is that in each city, there are certain requirements for what it takes to deliver this kind of high standard care that may be different in an Indore and a different in a Lucknow or a Gurgaon. But each city has its own unique characteristics, and our approach into those cities is in line with that, but always making sure that we are able to deliver very high-end, high quality of care. We do not want to go into cities or enter into partnerships just for the sake of showing bed additions. They have to be able to deliver the quality and standard of care at the right value system that we stand for.
Okay. Thanks, Rafi, and all the best. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
So thank you very much to all of you who joined the call, as well as for everybody who asked questions to try to understand our approach to healthcare delivery a little bit better. We remain aligned towards delivering and focusing on high end of care. We remain aligned to ensuring that we are managing our institution with the values that we believe are the right values for healthcare delivery. And we remain committed to delivering this kind of growth that you can be proud of for all of our stakeholders. So thank you very much for taking the time and for participating in this journey along with us. And we look forward to speaking with you also.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of JM Financial, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.